This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. You can picture the scene, a secret cell of student resistors in an occupied country. A young woman assigned to kill the head of the secret police. And to get close to him, she has to seduce him first. But this isn't Hitchcock or Berlin. This is 1940s China, when Shanghai was occupied by the Japanese. And the director of the film, Lust, Caution, is the remarkable Ang Lee. He's made a career out of telling love stories set in unforgiving circumstances, including Brokeback Mountain and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Ang Lee is here with the screenwriter and producer of Lust, Caution and other of his films, James Shamus. Welcome to Studio 360.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
So Lust, Caution is about a group of young theater students who meet at university and almost immediately begin plotting to assassinate a Chinese official in the Japanese-controlled puppet government. You grew up in Taiwan. Did this period of Chinese history have a different meaning for you, given how you'd been educated about the 1940s?
It was quite the opposite from the truth. Now, we talk about the heroic war against the Japanese, but the this part is very much hidden in our history in terms of education to my generation, because they regard as a sham, the puppet government, national disgrace. They're traitors. So there's never a film that's done based on this period of time.
Huh, that's interesting. Did you have to do, James, a lot of homework, research in Chinese history to write this script?
Yeah, you know, I think my purpose and role in this was trying to think cinematically. There's a moment halfway in the picture when all these silly young students who are trying to become resistance heroes are faced with having to perform a real murder. And to me, the inspiration came from a number of places, including movies like The Conformist, you know, Bertolucci's Conformist, which also takes place in World War II and also includes a scene of a stabbing, the famous one in the woods, where a number of people have to go participate in this event. In The Conformist, which is an amazing sequence, it's all about the point of view of the woman as she sees this thing happen and feels the threat coming her way. And what we try to do in Aang's version of that was to multiply the points of view and make the murderers themselves feel that same sense of threat
horror
coming their way.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because this is an unrated movie or is an NC-17 movie, lots of attention has been given to the very explicit scenes of lovemaking. Did you begin with the idea of that being an important part of the movie?
Well, I know I'm going to get into sex. The title has lust. It's a big lust there. Yes, I think it's important that sort of anchor the emotion and the niche and the essential elements of the movie. To me, that's the anchor, and that's the ultimate performance too. The two brave actors. I was very uncomfortable, very nervous. I feel like in hell. It's kind of painful, but to me,
painful to make or to watch
painful
now.
To make. No, I think it's very intense to watch. I don't say pleasurable, but it's very intense.
The fact is the film is very much about truth, emotional truth as well as narrative truth. Who's telling the truth? What's real? And here are two characters. One is a spy. The other is spying on that spy, seducing him with the purpose to assassinate him. And so the sex really functions in that way. It's not the typical NC-17 sizzling, salacious pitch that you get a lot of times from these kinds of films. It's something much more, as Aang says, intense and I think quite profound.
In China, this version is not being shown, right?
No, but it's so interesting. No, it's a general audience version. I caught it myself.
The film was released in its integral version in Taiwan
and
in
Hong Kong.
And that's
and
been
now
for,
Singapore.
And now it's opened a little later in the mainland, where indeed, and it was quite a process. At first, it looked like it would only be a couple minutes of cuts, and then the cuts got a little bit bigger and bigger over the
last. Was that a matter of negotiation with some authority?
You don't really negotiate. They kind of tell you.
Oh, really?
seems like it. So that's fine. And it was an unbelievable tidal wave of rush to see this picture last week when it finally opened in the mainland. So it's very exciting because during the course of making the movie, I think Aang really was truly convinced that no one in the Chinese language world would have an interest in the film and probably revile it. It is so transgressive and so radical in its re-envisioning.
Politically, of historically transgressive.
Politically, historically, and I would say in terms of its sexual politics and its depiction of, in particular of women's desires.
I think there's a hunger to see something like this, a touch of humanity. That's very moving and very encouraging to me. This might be the first movie that all three part of Chinese language major territory sort of agrees on. I think the existence of the movie, whatever the form is, itself is a landmark.
Watching Lost Caution, it reminded me that there is a sort of pattern of secret identities in a lot of your films. Brokeback Mountain, of course. But one of your earliest movies, The Wedding Banquet, is about this successful Taiwanese guy in New York, and his parents don't know he's gay, and he agrees to marry a Chinese woman to get them off his back. Let's listen to a clip of The Wedding Banquet.
I said, forget about it.
Don't you see? This way, Wei Wei can stay in the States and paint, and you can finally get your parents off your back.
Forget about it.
Look, we can move her into the basement room until after the immigration exam, take some photos, send them back to your mom and dad, and perfect.
Forget it.
Hey, as a married couple, you'll be able to take a big tax break.
It's Ang Lee's The Wedding Banquet. I'm always interested in what artists feel about their early work. What do you think of that film?
It's a funny movie. Thinking back, as I thought to myself, what happened to me? I started out my career with comedies, social satires, and after Sense and Sensibility, I made six tragedies. I would like to go back to that.
He's really suffered the longest midlife crisis in artistic history. Hearing that, you realize.
But a productive
one. It was funny.
Yes.
The movies were funny.
Wedding Banquet really presented to all of us this opportunity to take a topic that was really serious and really important, and using American genre, in this case the kind of screwball comedy of remarriage, just making it gay and Chinese kind of revived it.
But there is this, again, in this
– identity crisis, yeah.
And especially sexually charged identity crisis that you return to again and again. Why is that?
I wish I know. I guess maybe first of all, I'm sexually repressed. Secondly,
okay.
It's a good
line. I hope
line
my wife
use.
Is not listening to this. She's a big fan of yours. But secondly, I do have identity problems. Like, what's the deepest cultural root for me? All my life, you know, I've been a foreigner. We've been an outsider in Taiwan, and then I come here to the States as a foreigner. When I go back to China, I'm Taiwanese or American, whatever.
But feeling like a perpetual outsider, I would think it would give you special gratification to make these quintessentially American films that you've made.
I think part of that is that because I'm not really rooted in that culture, my resource come from the reality, not theatrical conventions. I think in some ways...
Not the theatrical conventions.
No, like when I get into Western, I talk to Western people and look into the literature and documentary. Same thing with Sense Sensibility. I check into the painting or literature, what have you, instead of theatrical.
So you're not blinded by the learned, mediated, iconic understanding of these things.
Right, impression. I had that problem when I do Chinese film. But
that's funny.
I see clearly what it is from a distance. But then the texture itself, I have to adapt and learn quite diligently and always look around and smell if I did the right thing. People say I sometimes twist genre.
Mm.
I sometimes feel I'm just untwisted, like set it straight. But that's just the way I see it.
Uh-huh. There are at least a couple of scenes in Lost Caution where the heroine goes to the movies. Were there movies you saw growing up in Taiwan that sort of planted the filmmaking seed and made you say, geez, I want to do that?
I always love to watch movies, and I'm like her. I'm very easy to cry. Sometimes I cry so hard, the whole roll of audience laughed. Look at that kid. So I daydream. I never think I'll be a filmmaker. I think one movie, when I was 18, I was actually in the Academy of Art, that I watched Bergman's Virgin Spring. That sort of epiphany for me. I think, well, director's a superstar. How wonderful if you can ask where God is with such beauty. I remember that. That sort of turned my life around.
Bergman is a real bonding thing for us. While we were in pre-production on this film, and Aang was in Hong Kong and I was flying back and forth in New York, we got the opportunity to visit Bergman on his island in the Baltic in Foldrø. They organized some screenings of films, and he had selected as the one non-Bergman film to screen that weekend in the summer that they'd done it for a few years, The Ice Storm. And the woman who ran the screening said, you know, please come out and visit, but don't expect to see the guy. And in fact, they organized a dinner and he didn't show up. And then we got the phone call the next afternoon saying, if you can be ready in 10 minutes, the car will pick you up and come on out and meet the man. He's actually invited you to his house. And the scene was just extraordinary when Aang got out of the car and saw him.
Yeah, it was just a hug. It was like, this man's took away my innocence, so to speak, because the world has changed. When I was 18, and now he gave me a hug, like very motherly hug. It was something. Life is all right. It's a pilgrimage experience for me.
And in the nick of time before his death.
We were, unfortunately, the last people to visit him.
He's like God to us.
Yeah.
But somehow we get to meet him and almost have his blessing and his hug so warmly. That was something.
Aang Lee, James Shamus, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lust Caution is out in theaters now. And finally this week...
Well, yes, I paid a price, but everybody does one way or another. You pay a terrible price if you don't express yourself. It just seethes within and makes you ill.
That's Norman Mailer, whom I spoke with here in Studio 360 in February. I'd asked him whether all his notorious fights and troublemaking had hurt his reputation as a novelist.
I reconsider self-pity to be poisonous. And I really, whenever I find a trace of self-pity in myself, I try to extirpate it. Almost like a germ, if you will. And the periods of my life that probably embarrassed me the most are those where I was being phoniest.
Norman Mailer died a week ago, aged 84. You can hear our entire conversation from earlier this year at studio360.org. That is it for today's show. Thanks very much for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next week. Studio 360 is produced by WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International. Special thanks this week to Jocelyn Ford. Our production team includes...
Julie Burstein, Lital Malad,
David Krasnow,
Michelle Siegel,
Derek John,
Jenny Lawton,
Pike Medinowski,
Sarah Lilly,
Kevin Ryan,
Dillian Goodman,
Ben Conniff,
Richard Ye, 我是叶怀德.
And our theme music is by David Van Tegum.
Studio 360 is funded in part by Ken and Lucy Lehman, supporting CARE in its efforts to alleviate global poverty, on the web at care.org, and SCG, whose charitable resources support FJC, a foundation of donor-advised funds, online at fjc.org, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art.
PRI, Public Radio International.
People in the carnival.
Bob Dylan, 1961, making up his past.
Did you travel with it? Did you watch the carnival?
I traveled carnival when I was 13 years old, all the way up till I was 19, every year.
Dylan was passing. Dylan was pretending he wasn't a middle-class Jewish kid from Minnesota.
Director Todd Haynes and his new Dylan biopic, next time in Studio 360 from PRI.